Hi, I'm Dave Radlauer. Welcome to Jazz Rhythm, a weekly exploration of the culture, personalities, and lore of early jazz music.
What's the matter with you, boy? Don't you know I got a right to sing the blues? Listen at this. Look out. One, two.
I got a right to sing the blues. I got a right to feel low down. I got a right to hang around down among the river. A certain gal in this old town keeps dragging my poor heart around. Babe, all I'm seeing from me in misery. Oh, I got a right to moan and sigh, got a right to sit and cry down the river. Oh, babe, I know the deep blue sea will soon be calling me. It must be love, say what you choose. I got a right to sing the blues.
In this hour, I want to talk with you about the great music made by Louis Armstrong that profoundly shaped and influenced the evolving art of jazz in the 1920s. With his Hot 5 and Hot 7 records, Louis laid the foundations for jazz as we know it today. Over a short 5 or 6 years, equipped only with his own intuitive musical sense and native ability, Louis Armstrong shaped jazz into a modern art, creating music that has stood and I think will continue to stand the test of time. a brilliant and spectacular and yet typical performance by Louis Armstrong. Potato Head Blues is Hot 7 from 1927. Real triumph of syncopated rhythmic variations and just one of a long string of brilliant and enduring masterpieces he was kind of turning out on a regular basis as part of his dynamic series of Hot 5 and Hot 7 records, which became probably the most important and influential recordings of classic jazz music. This is Jazz Rhythm, Jumping Swing, Classic Blues, and Hot Jazz, Old and New. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks so much for joining me in celebrating the genius of Louis Armstrong in the 1920s. Why were these records so revolutionary? What did Louis achieve in the 20s? Where does Louis fit in the evolution of New Orleans jazz into classic jazz? In this hour, I'm going to try and answer these questions and share with you the wonderful music from Louis' greatest period of creativity and invention in the 1920s. When Louis left New Orleans to join King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band in Chicago, he was joining the finest collection of New Orleans talent aggregated in one band in the early 20s. The key to understanding this classic New Orleans form as it was expressed in the Oliver Band are two words, polyphonic ensemble. Big word alert. This is actually an easy to understand idea if we break it down. Polyphonic means that the music contained multiple poly melodic lines, phonic, and it was played together simultaneously, ensemble. In this classic form of New Orleans jazz, the trumpet or cornet plays a lead melody, and counter melodies are improvised by the clarinet and trombone. The result is a kind of a rich, pleasing counterpoint, not unlike Baroque music. This is Canal Street Blues, jointly composed by Louis and King Oliver. Played in a really excellent facsimile by the Southern Stompers, this is, oddly, a French band specializing in the style of King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band. And the Southern Stompers include the somewhat mysterious early Armstrong emulator, Irakli. He plays second cornet the way Armstrong seconded King Oliver. And Doc Cheatham said that when he heard Irakli, he thought he sounded very much like Louis in the early days. Joe King Oliver's innovation to classic New Orleans ensemble polyphony was to add Louis as a second cornet, beefing up the lead melody line. It seemed to add drive and excitement to the ensemble. Louis's innovation was to forcefully double and anticipate Oliver's lead line, adding eloquent interjections, breaks that were sort of micro solos in counterpoint to the whole band. All of this is heard to very good effect in the 1923 very lovely, one of my favorites, Tears, written and arranged by the pianist and soon-to-be Louis' second wife, Lil Hardin. Thank you. King Oliver's music has had a lasting effect among traditional jazz fans and a steady line of bands since Lew Waters' Yerba Buena Jazz Band resurrected this style about 1940. We heard Tears, the Oliver Band from 1923, and I Ain't Gonna Tell Nobody, the Peruna Jazzmen of Denmark. It seems that the Oliver style is particularly well appreciated and well loved over, I don't know, the last three or four decades in Scandinavia, Germany, and Northern Europe. I'm Dave Radlauer. This is Jazz Rhythm. Thanks for joining me to look and listen more deeply into how Louis Armstrong was shaping the evolution of jazz in the 1920s, and I think for that matter, really shaping the whole future course of American music. One point of view has it that this classic New Orleans style we've been discussing, polyphonic ensemble jazz, died on the day in 1925 when Louis Armstrong's Hot Five first recorded. Why would this be so? Louis refocused the performance onto the soloist. His soaring virtuosity took center stage in these recordings, with very little ensemble playing remaining. Some ensemble was still present, but it became secondary. From November 12, 1925 forward, the soloist was paramount in classic jazz music. Is this a criticism of Louis? Some have said it is. I don't think so. I mean, should Mozart be criticized for ending the Baroque era? I think in art, geniuses create new art forms by breaking old rules so that their creativity can grow. And between 1925 and 1930, Louis Armstrong's creativity grew by leaps and bounds. And with him, jazz grew by leaps and bounds. To demonstrate how this soloing and later his remarkable vocals differed from New Orleans ensemble polyphony, listen to his virtuoso trumpet solos, breaks, and wordless scatting on Skedaddydat. Thank you. Oh, that's just so good. Louis Armstrong and his Hot Five from 1928's Skedaddy Dat. Kid Ory, by the way, sounding great on trombone on that. Now, what Louis was doing in the late 20s was influencing not only trumpeters, but all jazz performers. And one of the ways that this happened was that he just sort of seemed to have a looser, natural swing than most of the musicians of his day. He had ways of accenting the rhythms of the music, so it didn't just follow a metronome, but came alive. So after he left King Oliver, at the urging of his wife, Lil, to go on his own as a star, he went to New York, where he was working for Fletcher Henderson's band for a year and a half, one of the top bands in New York. Now, Fletcher Henderson's orchestra was a large dance band. It had many of the hot players from Harlem in it, but at this time, 1924 and 25, the band was reading their notes from sheet music, except for the solos, and rhythmically it was very stiff and ricky-ticky, verging on the cornball. But Lewis's playing was a revelation to the Fletcher Henderson band and New Yorkers, and his mere presence seemed to loosen up the band, got it to swing better and play hotter. Unfortunately, many of the band members looked upon Louis kind of jealously as an outsider. He didn't really fit in with this sophisticated New York gang, and quite frankly, he was in over his head with the written sheet music. Still, during the year and a half in New York, Armstrong had a huge impact on jazz players in New York. In Duke Ellington's words, quote, "The guys never heard anything like it. There weren't words to describe that kind of kick. Louis sat in and played anywhere. Everybody on the street was talking about the guy." So Louis helped to transform the Fletcher Henderson Orchestra into one of the hottest bands around and influenced all the players in Harlem. Here, for example, this is from a fascinating disc. Timeless Historical presents Fletcher Henderson and Louis Armstrong. These are selections that focus on Louis in high detail by editing them to leave only the solos by Louis. It results in these kind of one-minute miniatures without some of the extraneous, kind of lame band routines and banal solos. It's quite interesting. Give it a listen. Alone at Last and Tell Me Dreamy Eyes, Fletcher Henderson's Orchestra, 1924-25. Those selections edited down to feature only Louis' solos. This is Jazz Rhythm, Jumping Swing, Classic Blues, and Hot Jazz, Old and New. I'm Dave Radlauer, and thanks for letting me have the, quite frankly, the privilege of sharing with you the music that Louis Armstrong was making in the 1920s.